Hi there once again, my name's Todd Fraser and I'm here with another ANZIC CTG podcast from the 19th annual CTG meeting from the beautiful Noosa Heads in Queensland. Joining me on this episode is Dr. Paul Young from Wellington Hospital in New Zealand to discuss the TTM2 trial. Paul, welcome.
Thanks very much.
Can we go back a step and just review the history of therapeutic hypothermia and how it's all unfolded over the last decade or so?
Yeah, okay. That's opening a gigantic can of worms, isn't it? So I guess if we look right back through things, I think the history goes back more than decades. More than a decade. For many decades, there has been animal data suggesting that therapeutic hypothermia might improve outcomes after cardiac arrest. And case reports of people surviving, very prolonged periods of cardiac arrest when their body was cooled down.
Yep.
And as you know, those two papers published in the New England Journal of Medicine in the same issue really changed practice around the world.
Mm.
Two studies with improvements in outcome with therapeutic hypothermia that were consistent with each other and led to changes in international guidelines and I think had a profound effect on practice around the world.
Yep.
Leading up to the TTM trial, which really compared two regimens of therapeutic hypothermia, actually.
Yep. Yep.
One of 33 degrees and one of less intensive therapeutic hypothermia, if you like, at 36 degrees and showed similar outcomes. And I think actually the result of the TTM trial has created a lot of uncertainty on a global scale because there are many ways of interpreting the collection of data now. If you look back, one possibility is that the earlier trials, which were very small trials actually, just represent statistical anomaly. They were very fragile trials in the sense that they depended on a very small number of outcomes to achieve statistical significance. And it's very unclear whether therapeutic hypothermia actually in the clinical setting of out-of-hospital cardiac arrest is better than just avoiding fever. And it's also unclear really whether the best possible therapeutic hypothermia might still result in better outcomes for particular subsets of patients. So there's a lot of uncertainty, I think.
Yeah. So when the TTM trial came out, it was positioned as almost game-changing, that this had reversed the position that we'd adopted over the previous decade. But further investigation seemed to reveal some more questions more than anything. What were those questions?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm not sure that it was ever pitched as being game-changing. I think it's presented in a very balanced way in the paper and really says either approach results in a similar outcome.
Right.
And many centres in Australia, I think, have adopted the TTM sort of 36 approach on the grounds that, it's less potentially less difficult to achieve a temperature of 36 compared to 33, less sedation, less paralysis, these sorts of things might be possible. But by the same token, there are many other centres around the world that have remained at 33 degrees on the grounds that they were getting good outcomes with 33 degrees and 36 degrees is no better. I think the questions that have been raised or remain still are, if we have cooling initiated more rapidly than was protocolised in the TTM 1 trial, whether that will result in better outcomes. There's also the issue of controlling the rewarming and how actively that's controlled, and also the possibility that all patients won't behave in the same way.
Mm.
You know, there may be some patients who benefit from therapeutic hypothermia and others who don't. So I think, and I guess the other point to make is that still, although the TTM trial was bigger than the previous trials, it's not a huge trial.
Mm.
I think the potential for benefit or harm with one arm or the other exists within the confidence intervals of that trial.
Yep. Is it plausible that people who generate a fever after a cardiac arrest are self-selecting themselves as poor outcome patients?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, yes, I think the development of fever after resuscitation from cardiac arrest is associated with worse outcomes, and it's probably associated with more severe primary brain injury. Certainly, if you look at the control arm of the Harker trial, it's pretty persuasive that development of fever is part of the overall natural history of the disease. And I think we see that in clinical practice. And, you know, we see that in the period after cooling has stopped as well. I mean, one of the interesting things is we did a study in the Austin and in Wellington Hospital looking at changes that occurred as a result of implementation of TTM-36.
Yep.
And because we both of those hospitals adopted it in our hospital policy soon after the publication of TTM. And one of the interesting sort of paradoxical findings was that we actually had more patients who had fever within their intensive care admission in the 33 degree group because of rebound fever.
Right.
Because I think one of the things that was different about the TTM protocol was that it really did focus on prevention of fever, not just in a therapeutic window, but beyond that therapeutic window as well.
Yeah.
And so I think that's an interesting thing to sort of consider and reflect on.
Yep. So what's the working hypothesis here? If somebody gets a fever in that period after a cardiac arrest, how does that influence their outcome?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is an association between fever and adverse outcome, and the thinking is that that is one of the things that primarily drives the brain injury or secondary brain injury.
Yeah.
So avoiding fever might prevent secondary brain injury, and the question as to whether avoiding fever results in similar outcomes to actually implementing therapeutic hypothermia is the question to be evaluated.
Yep.
Because I think the difference between 33 and 36 in terms of how actively one needs to manage temperature, at least I'm going to forward it back to my impression. You know, my impression is that actually in reality, the difference isn't that much. Both of them require active intervention most of the time.
Yep.
Whereas if the intervention is simply avoiding fever, then actually potentially we're talking about an intervention that is much less labour intensive actually than implementing either 33 or 36.
Yep.
And so I think that would be a really important thing to know.
Yeah. One of the challenges with these sorts of trials, and we've seen it in a few of the trials I've spoken about this week, is defining the indication for an intervention on a continuous variable. So if you avoid 37.5 degrees, how do you know that it's not better to avoid 37? How many of these trials do you need to do to be able to get to a point where you have confidence that that's the right indication?
Yeah, so that's a good question. And there are likely to be, you know, maybe temperature's not the best example, but there are likely to be many physiological variables where the relationship between the variable and the outcome is a U-shaped relationship. And I guess the more separation that one has between groups, the more likely it is that there will be differences in general terms. I mean, presumably the nadir of the U will be different for different variables. And the answer to when do we know what the answer actually is partly about science slowly advancing, you know? So we'll become more and more interested in the small differences and potentially more and more interested about the particular targets that relate, that are appropriate for different patients as time goes by. But actually at the moment, I think if you look at the sum total of the data, we're not yet at the point where, you know, trying to decide whether 37 or 37.5 is better as a sort of biologically plausible separation in temperature that might result in a difference in outcome. Part of driving this trial and the reason to choose, you know, best therapeutic hypothermia at 33 degrees as compared to avoidance of fever is to maintain treatment separation. Because if we were to take the approach of going 36 to 37 versus avoidance of fever, then there'd be a lot of overlap and little separation between the groups.
Yep.
And so we did and have explored the option of a three-arm trial, you know, 33, 36 avoidance of fever. But it just adds more complexity. And actually, on a global scale, 33 degrees still has a lot of traction. And so I think it's quite important to have a 33-degree arm. And probably the difference between a 36-degree arm and an avoidance of fever arm is not so much.
Yep. So tell us a bit more about the trial, how it's structured, what numbers you'll need, etc.
Yeah, so this is a randomised controlled trial, parallel group superiority trial, which is investigating, as I've indicated, it's investigating 33 degrees as opposed to simply avoidance of fever. And one of the beautiful things about this trial is that we have managed to, for the first time, create genuine synergy and alignment between two major cardiac arrest trials. So the TAME trial, which is a trial of mild therapeutic hypercapnia, and the TTM trial, essentially have almost completely aligned eligibility criteria and outcome criteria. So we're collaborating very closely between the TTM network of investigators and the TAME investigators to offer both of these trials at every site around the world that's participating in either. And so what will happen is that we will have one consent form that says, you know, you've been enrolled in a cardiac arrest trial, which is looking at these two aspects of care. We'll be able to pay the research coordinators twice to collect the same information and do the same follow-ups. So that's really interesting, really exciting, both because I think it's a great way of collaborating and expanding the network of investigators working together on an important global public health problem. It's a great way of generating income for the sites. And it's also a fantastic opportunity to explore the interaction between therapeutic hypercapnia and therapeutic hypothermia in a way that we never otherwise could. So it really gives us three trials for the price of one, actually. It gives us the TTM trial, it gives us the TAME trial, and it gives us the interaction between the two trial. So that's really exciting. So at the moment, the trial looks like it will be around 2,000 patients. It's funded already from Sweden for, I think, around 1,600 or 1,500 patients. And then we're putting in additional funding applications into Australia and New Zealand to try and get the sample size up to around 2,000, which will make it the largest cardiac arrest trial conducted, and will combine with the TTM1 study and the other therapeutic hypothermia studies provide a very large pool of data for individual patient data and meta-analysis of looking at, you know, particular subgroups of patients who might benefit.
Now, Paul, one of the things that you highlighted there was that by avoiding fever, you're potentially conserving resources. It's far less labour intensive. Can you outline what that intervention arm will actually look like? What strategies do you employ to avoid fever?
Yeah, so the first thing is regular paracetamol. Then if the patient, and the patient will have strict measurement of core body temperature continuously, and then basically introduction of a physical cooling device once they become febrile.
Right. Yeah. Are you still looking for trial sites as part of the...
Yes, absolutely. Test? So we are looking for trial sites for both TAME and for TTM, and hopefully everyone will like the idea of getting paid twice to do the same work. So absolutely. So anyone who's interested in either study can contact me or contact Glenn Eastwood or anyone involved in either of the studies. We'd be happy to hear from people.
Great. Paul Young, thanks very much for joining us.
No worries. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for joining me again on this ANZIC CTG podcast. For more episodes, please check out my blog at www.essentialcriticalcare.com.